Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian, former NFL scout and now Vice President of Football and Research at Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. As always, our producer, Justin Stein, is with us on the controls, and we are back today to talk more about free agency, previewing things as we get into next week. And Aaron, last week we talked offense. This week it's all defense. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm alive and well. Staying healthy. How are you?
I'm jealous of your home office.
I think free agency is going to end up being a little different this year. I have a feeling there may not be as many players flying to new cities to have big press conferences to announce that they signed. But I'm expecting that free agency signings will go ahead as scheduled, and we'll have some new players on some new teams in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're talking here in the midst of this, all the coronavirus reaction now that's happening, the NBA and NCAA basketball. We were just saying before we started rolling here, things don't look good for the XFL.
Yeah, it's a shame that if the XFL finally got minor league football right, only to have this virus shut it down. But my hope would be that they could finish up in the summer or at least have a second season next year.
Yeah, hopefully, if nothing else, they can at least come back and maybe get it together. I don't know what those venues that they're playing in. I don't know what the availability is like, but maybe they could be able to figure that out. Because, yeah, it's a huge shame. At least NFL-wise, shouldn't be too much of an interruption. Like you said, maybe the press conferences, but free agency will go off without a hitch. And who knows what the draft will be like? Who even knows a month and a half from now what the state of things will really be as far as everybody's health and safety? But you'd think that there'd be some interruption to the planned canoe trips in Las Vegas.
Yeah, you don't have to have fans at the draft to have a draft. I mean, I think you can have a draft. I don't think you're going to end up having tons of fans in the streets in Vegas.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, what's it like to be at a draft? And I never knew the answer to that question until they did it in Philadelphia a couple of years ago. Because when you're with a team, you're at home. You're in the war room. So I think it's like any other business. It'll be more difficult, but at least it's not in season for the NFL, which was where the real problems would obviously be.
Yeah, it's a little different for us, I think, than it is for the other sports, because all the other major sports are all being hit by this.
Absolutely. All right. Speaking of being hit by things, let's get into the free agent defensive lineman start. Let's start up front and move towards the back end. Starting on the interior, one guy that I wanted to talk about, just because he's had a kind of interesting performance when you look at over the past few years in terms of points saved. He was a league leader with two different teams, with both the Giants and Detroit, 16 run defense point saved. So that's specific to run defense, and obviously that's a big part of what he does. 16 in 2017, 23 run defense point saved in 18. Again, led the league down to 7 run defense point saved in 2019. So a bit of a down year there. What do you make of a guy like Damon Harrison? Obviously, the value comes much more so in the run game than in the pass game, but a guy that's shown the ability to be really dominant there.
Yeah, I think the problem is just the value of the run versus the value of the pass. I mean, your top defensive tackles these days are going to be guys who are pass rushers if they can be pass rushers, and I think Harrison takes a little backseat because he's such a run stopper.
Yeah, and to your point there, you look at the highest performing total points all across the board, including pass rush total points and pass defense total points, which I don't think defensive tackles had a lot of. Aaron Donald, of course, every year is at the top of things, but other guys that outperformed snacks this year, Fletcher Cox, Grady Jarrett, Shelby Harris, those are the sort of defensive tackles that really accumulate a lot of value.
Yeah, and the guy I wanted to bring up actually is sort of similar, which is Leonard Williams. Now, I think we all can agree that the Leonard Williams trade made no sense for the Giants. Trading a third and a fifth for a player they were going to have for 8 games when they were basically out of the playoff race was crazy.
The Giants did that? I can't believe the Giants would do that.
As far as how good Leonard Williams is, I think it's important to point out that he's not just a run stopper. He has a very big habit of having more hurries than he does sacks, which means he's got more of a pass rush impact than the standard stats would suggest. He had 36 hurries in 2019, but only half a sack. So that is a lot more effect on the pass rush than that half a sack would show. He was 25-5 the year before that, but in 2017, it was 35 hurries with two sacks. So I think Leonard Williams may be, strangely enough, a little underrated.
Yeah, we need to do a little bit more work on the relationship between hurries and sacks, because we certainly know that hurries are more predictive of future sacks than sacks themselves, which stands to reason in a lot of ways. But sort of understanding exactly what sort of a skill there may or may not be towards converting hurries into sacks, to finishing, as we would call it in scouting parlance, on the quarterback. I want to look more into if there's something to be said for different player archetypes and how different guys convert hurries into sacks at potentially different rates. It reminds me of the concept of expected goals in soccer, right? Where you shoot from and what type of shot it is much more important than the actual, whether it went in the net or not, in terms of predicting the performance of the team, stuff like that. However, you do see your Messies of the world that actually create goals above expected at a sustainable positive rate. That's kind of like the real interesting thing that it would be interesting to kind of see if we could distill that there with any sorts of players.
Or another thing we found in football, which is that you can predict interceptions better with passes defensed than with interceptions.
Another interesting one.
But are there defenders who get a higher percentage of passes defense turned into interceptions? Is there something to the idea that certain defenders have better hands, better ball skills?
We'll talk about some of those pass defenders later when we get there. As far as the defensive linemen, I do think there's some good players, some good kind of depth in this free agent class. Javon Hargrave, another guy that I really like, really important part of what the Steelers do up front there, that I think would be a priority for them. But good depth there. The problem is going to be, is as we've talked about, valuing these guys, especially when they're more valuable in the run game than the pass game. We don't have the same problem with edge defenders, though. And you asked me to pull some research on a very interesting Patriot who's a free agent. Let's talk Jamie Collins.
Yeah, who's sort of an edge defender and sort of not. I mean, the Patriots defense has been kind of interesting the last 2 years in the way that they've used Collins and Kyle Van Noy sort of as part-time edge rushers, part-time off-ball linebackers. But something I wanted you to check out about Jamie Collins. Collins had a phenomenal year in his return to the Patriots last year, but it is so heavily slanted towards the first half of the season, I would be really worried about flukiness. So in the total points saved, in the first half of the season, 37.5. In the second half of the season, 17.5. Now, 17.5 is still a good number, but that's most of his value being in the first half of the season. I'll also point out 6 of his 7 sacks were in the first half of the season, and the one sack that he had at the end of the year was a coverage sack. And all 3 of his interceptions were in the first half of the season. So if you remember how dominant Collins was when the Patriots had an all-time great defense for the first half of the year, that did lighten a lot in the second half of the year.
Yeah, it's like going from the type of season Nick Bosa had to the type of season that Danielle Hunter or Shaq Lawson had in terms of total points. His kind of first half rate versus the second half rate in points saved. And as you point out, that was driven a lot by sacks and interceptions. Shows up on the basic stat sheet too with him.
Yep. There's a lot of edge guys. Shaquille Barrett, if he's not franchised by Tampa. Jadeveon Clowney is going to be out there. Dante Fowler Jr., Everson Griffin, and you want to talk about
Robert Quinn. Yeah, Robert Quinn's a guy. I'm not exactly sure what his value's like. Certainly getting up there a little bit in age and has had a few kind of weird seasons now, moving around. He was with the Dolphins, not really playing well. And he came back around and with the Cowboys this past year, 36 points saved was actually 12th amongst defensive ends. He finished the year with 11.5 sacks and 56 total pressures. So I'm not sure exactly what the market's like for a guy like that. I'm not sure what exactly to expect from him going in the future, but he certainly played well in a contract year, trying to maybe resuscitating his value a little bit.
Yeah, the other guy that might be interesting is Yannick Ngakoue. I think there's a little danger of him going from being a little underrated as a later draft pick to being a little overpaid. I do want to point out the ESPN, when they track double teams using the NFL Next Gen stats, they found something interesting with Ngakoue, which is that of most of the top pass rushers, he gets double teamed like the least.
And were the, I forget what the news, the latest news was. Was he, they're planning on franchising him, or it's still up in the air?
He doesn't want to stay. Yeah, and he doesn't want to stay. And we've gotten a lot of announcements of where of teams are planning on franchising guys, but nobody has actually been offered the franchise tag yet as of this recording. Yeah, he has tweeted out he does not want to stay in Jacksonville.
Probably the teams have been told not to do any of their tagging stuff until after the CBA gets worked out. I'd have to assume that's what's going on there.
Well, there's another thing that we're all sitting and waiting for is I wonder if that's, I mean, you would think that there's no reason why the virus scare should affect that, yet we're still waiting for some news on the CBA. So,
well, if somehow the virus scare affects the revenue projections going forward, right? We all seen the stock market go crazy the past couple of days. It could affect it, but I don't know how it would affect it. If you're the players, does it make you more likely to accept the deal? Because then you're saying, oh, wow, we got to take what we can get before this downturn comes, what was kind of offered before we saw any signs of negativity? Or does it somehow make you kind of dig in even more to make sure that you're getting what's fair for you projecting forward with a new greater TV deal being even more unlikely, right? That was part of the kicker, was increased TV revenue would lead to an increased percentage for the players. That looks like it's less and less likely by the day.
Yeah, the bigger issue seems to just be disagreement between the higher end players and the lower players about some of the aspects of the new CBA.
Sports Info Solutions brings you the second annual edition of the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, with scouting reports and statistical breakdowns on over 280 college football players who are likely to be drafted or signed as rookie free agents in 2020. New features this year include unique and informative NFL team pages, research deep dives by the SIS R&D team, and for the first time ever, the NCAA version of the SIS flagship football statistic, Total Points. At Sports Info Solutions, we collect and analyze college football players like it has never been done before. Whether you're a film junkie, an aspiring analyst, or just looking for the most comprehensive information on what your NFL team's rookies did while they were playing college football, this book has what you are looking for and more. Michael Lombardi, former NFL general manager and three-time Super Bowl winner, said, "This book is the closest fans will get to reading real NFL scouts reports, because it is detailed reporting with a complete understanding of what it takes to play in the NFL. Well done." John Park, the manager of research and strategy for the Indianapolis Colts, said, "Scouts matter because not everything that counts can be counted, and relevant data matters since not everything that can be counted counts. With that said, SIS creates relevant football data that matters." Please check out the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. It is available wherever you get books. You can get it on acta.com, acta.com. You can get it on amazon.com, or you can find it at Barnes and Noble. That's the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, comprehensive scouting and analytics guide, all of the 2020 NFL draft prospects, brought to you by Sports Info Solutions. All right. Up next, let's move off the ball a little bit and talk some linebackers. One guy I wanted to talk about is a guy that would be overvalued by traditional statistics. John Shirley has done this research, and he's written about it at length. You can find it in the Football Rookie Handbook. And what he's talked about is Blake Martinez from the Packers, a guy who racks up tackles. He's there in the top 10 of like the tackles leaderboards every year. But he's a guy that, despite all of his tackles, when we look at two statistics, tackles over expected, which takes into account where you're lined up, what the offense is doing, like what gap they're running to specifically, for example, and how likely you are to make the tackle in that situation, and then looking at whether or not you over or underperform, as opposed to just counting tackles. When we look at that stat, and then we look at a stat that I like even more, we call it adjusted tackle depth plus. This basically takes your average depth of tackle, and again, controls it for where you're lined up. So if you're a safety, your average tackle depth would be different than if you're a defensive tackle, for example. So it normalizes it by position. An average ATD plus would be at 100. You're above 100 at, say, 110. You're 10% above average. At 90, you're 10% below average. When we look at these statistics, Blake Martinez is just really average in terms of tackles above expected, and he's poor in terms of adjusted tackle depth plus. He's making tackles way down behind the line of scrimmage that are schemed for him to be making the tackles. So, yes, we'll give him some credit for getting the guy on the ground, but he's not getting the guy on the ground more often than we expect him to, and he's definitely not getting the guy on the ground any closer to the line of scrimmage than we'd expect him to. So he's a guy that I think is a little bit overvalued when you look just on those traditional stats.
That sounds definitely like it agrees with what I've read subjectively from Packers fans and how they feel about Martinez.
Yeah, when you look at that team, certainly you think there are other places where that they'd like to address before trying to commit to him.
And I'll point out another player who I think everybody at this point knows is overrated by conventional tackle stats is Alec Ogletree.
You don't need to go too much further with that one. I agree with you there. This is the position that you've been dying to talk about. All of the different corners that are available in free agency this year, where do you want to start?
Well, the first thing to remember about cornerbacks, I think, is the difficulty of judging them given the year-to-year inconsistency of cornerback performance. And that's something, by the way, that has been found in a lot of different ways. We've certainly found that the cornerback charting stats that we tracked with our charting project, then that was taken over by the Sports Info Solutions charting, the year-to-year consistency of cornerback stats is pretty bad. And I think that anecdotally, the year-to-year performance of cornerbacks, you know, anecdotally, we all know that there were years where, certain cornerbacks like Antonio Cromartie would have great years and then terrible years, and it just felt like they went randomly from one to the other. And I'll also point out that our compatriots at Pro Football Focus, we don't talk about them a lot on this podcast, but just to point out where their research has agreed with our research, that in their stats, they've found the same thing. Cornerback performance with their WAR stat is less consistent from year to year than other positions. So you're going to quote some stats for cornerbacks, but it's tough to sort of determine how good cornerbacks are based on these stats because they tend to bounce about from year to year. That being said, one cornerback who has had pretty good stats in multiple years, and I think is the best guy on the market, is Byron Jones. 14th in yards allowed per pass, 39th, which is not quite as good in success rate this year. The year before, 5th in success rate, 22nd in yards allowed per pass. And again, I think because of the sort of inconsistency of cornerback stats and just how many cornerbacks there are being rated, it doesn't matter if a guy is not in the top 5 or 6. As long as he's near the top of the league, that's a good thing. And Byron Jones has been near the top of the league pretty much every year.
Yeah, he's kind of remarkably consistent when you look at his stats, especially the advanced stat line. He's had between 25 and 30 total points each of the last 4 years. He's never been a big interceptions guy. Just 1 or 0 interceptions each of the last 4 years. But in terms of some other stats, he's a guy that's never allowed more than 40 completions in a season, never allowed a completion percentage above 57%, never allowed more than 500 yards in a season as the primary defender in coverage, never allowed 7 yards a target, never 5 touchdowns allowed was his peak back in 2016. So real consistency. He's a guy that can tackle, really fits into what the Cowboys want to do there. And as we talked about a little bit before, I think there's real risk that they can lose him. And I think they can lose him to a division rival. I think the Eagles have to be all over Byron Jones just based
that
on
that is the talk. Yep. Based on their weaknesses, they are all over him.
The only risk there is that if they overpay for Byron Jones, because as consistent as he's been, I don't see him as an elite player in the league. If you pay elite money to very good players, you can get into trouble. But I think if you're the Eagles, you really have no choice. You gotta pony up and fix that position.
You look at their cornerback performance this year, just looking at a couple of other guys that are also free agents. Ronald Darby, 86th in yards allowed per play. I think that's out of like 86 cornerbacks that are qualified. And Jalen Mills was 68. Definitely was a massive weakness for them this year, cornerback play.
No doubt about it. And just talking about kind of the inconsistency there, Jalen Mills might be the best example I can bring up. A guy that had 5 points saved each of the last 2 years, was credited with 60 points saved in 2017, a year that he had 12 PBUs, three interceptions, and wasn't allowing much to get by him at all, compared to obviously being a weak point for them on the back end in the last 2 years.
Another guy you could talk about with inconsistency is another big free agent, and that's Chris Harris Jr. Played a lot more on the outside in 2019 and really struggled, 87th in yards allowed per pass. I guess it wasn't 86 qualifying quarterbacks because Harris was actually worse than Darby. 74th in success rate. And the year before, he was 26th in yards allowed per pass. He dropped from 30 points saved in 2018 to 11 points saved in 2019. So when you sign him, the question is, one, will he bounce back? And two, are you using him correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a guy that his value comes from being in the slot. I don't think you want to use him on the outside. And I think that's why he struggles when he's out there. So, you know, part of the thing with versatility that makes it so important is that you can't scheme around versatility. Versatility beats schemes because you can't put him in a situation that he doesn't want to be in. With a guy like Chris Harris, you can sort of scheme around him a little bit. Still, I would say just with the type of player that he's been overall, I don't mind him on the outside, on the inside. I think this is a great player, but if you can, you want him in the slot because he can be a difference maker in there. We know that it's easier to complete passes to the slot than it is to outside wide receivers, so it stands to reason that slot corners can have a lot of value if they can really suppress that.
One other guy I wanted to bring up, and that's James Bradbury. This is switching and now going to more of an outside corner. Advanced stats here, the charting stats are not superlative. Over the last 2 years, he was 29th and 40th in yards allowed per pass, 51st and 34th in success rate. All of those numbers are pretty average. But when you consider who he has to cover as a number one corner in the NFC South, what I think is more impressive is Carolina, number eight against number one receivers in 2019 in DVOA. That is adjusted for opponent. So it's adjusted for having to cover guys like Julio Jones and Michael Thomas. Fifth against number one receivers in 2018. So I think Bradbury may be a bit of an underrated asset, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes in free agency.
Yep, and another guy that I'm very interested in is a guy that we've talked about before, a team that, despite the inconsistency year to year at corner, built on the back end this year in a big way. That's Jimmy Smith of the Baltimore Ravens. We always talk about how he's one of the leaders in terms of charting stats. He seems to be a guy that performs well every year, but he's also a guy that hasn't stayed healthy, and he's a guy that's missed games because of steroid suspensions. So a big, you know, availability is the greatest ability thing with him. But when he's out there, he's been really outstanding. Over the last 4 years, just four touchdowns allowed against 20 pass breakups and six interceptions. And again, that's in limited time over the last 4 years. So he's a guy that I've always kind of had my eye on since he came out. Getting up there, he's 31 years old now, so he's not quite the young guy that he used to be, but one of these big-bodied physical corners that I think really brings a lot to the table when he's on the field.
Yeah, only 9 games in the regular season last year. Has not played 16 games in the regular season since 2015.
All right. Anything else at the corner position?
Just that there's a lot of guys out there that are just kind of guys. Breshad Breeland had better charting stats last year, but he doesn't have a great history. Eli Apple was better after he went to New Orleans, but he doesn't have a great history. Prince Amukamara.
Certainly up and down.
Pretty average starter. Trey Waynes has been a pretty average starter. Logan Ryan has been a pretty average slot corner. Who can also start, like, there's a lot of guys out there. Kendall Fuller is interesting. He shows the real inconsistency of slot corners because a couple years ago he was phenomenal when he was with
Washington.
And then when he went to Kansas City in the Alex Smith trade, his numbers dropped off significantly.
Yep, he was good last year, but he was okay in 2018, I was going to say. Missed a lot of time in 2019, but yeah, 2017 was the year that was his real coming out party, and then it's kind of been inconsistent since then. I still think he's my favorite of the Fuller brothers, but it's probably a Fuller house in Kansas City at this point. You mentioned just a second ago Logan Ryan. Logan Ryan actually had a pretty nice season based on total points last year. I'm trying to pull up the numbers right now as
we talk. I wonder whether that's specifically making big plays, because as far as like in general, he was 56th in yards allowed per pass, 43rd in success rate, which are pretty average numbers. But maybe he had more picks or more plays in particularly big situations and therefore did better in points earned.
Yep. Four interceptions, four forced fumbles, 13 PBUs, probably have a big part to do with it. A guy that definitely shows up leadership-wise. I think he was a big part of what the Titans did this year. It'll be interesting to see how much they prioritize bringing him back. Another kind of Swiss Army knife type of slot safety type of guy.
And with a lot of these teams, you look at their depth chart and you ask, like, you know, how much can they, are they going to bring these guys back versus can they lose them? The Ravens have a pretty deep depth chart. At cornerback, when it comes to a guy like, Jimmy Smith, but for example, the Titans, they'll definitely need a replacement for Logan Ryan if he leaves, because right now it's Adoree Jackson's never quite lived up to his draft position. Malcolm Butler was injured for half the year, and then Logan Ryan, and that's their three starters. And then they've got Tremaine Brock, but he's also a free agent, and he's like really old.
Yeah, it's fascinating the way that they were able to play. I really do think that their running game and Derrick Henry really helped cover up for a lot of ills, not just with Ryan Tannehill making his performance probably unsustainably good for that time with all the play action, but also defensively. I think with the way that they were able to control football games from a running perspective, it really did make the game an easier one to play, sort of complementary style for that defense.
Yeah, they've got a strong front with Casey and Jeffrey Simmons, you know, who played more than expected as a rookie.
Yep, nice pick there. All right, let's move to the back end with the safeties. There were just a couple of guys that I wanted to highlight because I think there's some really good talent that's available kind of at safeties. Maybe not anybody of the Earl Thomas caliber, but somebody who was fourth in safety points saved in 2019 with 46 points saved, HaHa Clinton Dix, the longtime Packer or recent Bear. He's a player that has a lot of versatility, does a good job back there. I think that he would be a good get for just about any team.
Yeah, not who I would have expected to be in the top four in safety points saved. Absolutely. The other name that you wanted to highlight is a guy who I much more expected to be near the top, and that's Anthony Harris from Minnesota, part of that great safety 1-2 punch with Harrison Smith.
Yes, he is somebody that I've loved since he came out. I still can't believe that he went undrafted, and he's really showed up for the Vikings, especially this past season. Almost assuredly earned himself some money, and they almost assuredly can't pay for him because they got to pay his teammate Harrison Smith, who led all safeties in points saved with 60. Harris was ninth with 41 points saved, so just a little bit behind HaHa Clinton Dix there. But he's a guy certainly more of a true free safety type than somebody who's going to be down in the box. Very much my type of player, an absolute ball hawk, and we see that with him, that he just makes a lot of plays on the football, and he just keeps showing up there. So I think he's going to get himself paid. Again, probably a guy, maybe unsustainable production to think that he's going to replicate what he did last year. But if you go back all the way to when he was at Virginia, you do see a guy who consistently produced on the ball, what we were just talking about before, that is it a replicable skill, that ability to make plays on the ball more often than you get to the ball.
Yeah, it's a really good year for safeties. I talk a lot about the fact that safety is, I think, the most difficult position in the game to judge from the outside, whether you're talking about stats or scouting, just because so much depends on what the team scheme is asking that safety to do, and you don't necessarily know from play to play whether you're right about what the scheme has been asking for. But Devin McCourty,
I couldn't agree more.
Justin Simmons, yeah. I mean, it's hard to judge safeties from the outside. But from what we know about safeties, this is a pretty good class of safeties in free agency.
Yeah, I really couldn't. I played safety growing up. I still think of myself as a safety when I watch football, when I think about football. That's really the prism that I look at it through. And even given all of that, I still agree with you. I find that both from an analysis perspective and from a scouting perspective, it's the most difficult position. I have much easier time evaluating an offensive lineman, even though I never played a snap of offensive line, than I do a safety. I'll get a good read on an offensive lineman in 2 games worth of film. It's going to take me at least 6 games of a safety just because of the amount you're going to be involved on the ball. and all the different things that kind of go into it that you just don't get a lot of sample to really understand what skills are important. So I agree with you. It's a tough thing. We see inconsistency in the numbers. How about another guy, Jimmy Ward? 2016, 11 points saved. 2017, negative 13. 2018, 9 points saved. And 2019, he had a great season this past year, 33 points saved. So is that his coordinator figuring out how to use him? Is it a matter of just him getting healthy in a way that he hasn't been? It's hard to say exactly what went into that, but I couldn't agree with your point more that this is a tough position to evaluate. In general, the thing that I would look for, and I think I heard Matt Bowen saying this recently, and it really resonated with me, in the modern NFL, you got to either be able to play on the back end, play in the box, or play in the slot. You got to be able to do two or three. If you can do two or three, we can play with you. If you can't go do at least two out of those three things, we're going to have a really hard time making a defense here. I definitely agree with that.
That makes Jimmy Ward a good guy, because Jimmy Ward is a guy who can play in the slot as well as on the back end.
Keep him out of the box, though, please.
Yeah, that's probably not where he's strongest.
All right. On that note, we will sign off and get out of here. We wish everybody health and safety as we make it through these bizarre times. We thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week to talk about the beginning stages of free agency as things start to shake out, and we'll get the tampering going even before that. So thank you for listening, and help spread the word about Off the Charts by subscribing, rating, and writing reviews. You can hit us up on Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS and at FB Outsiders. I'm at Matt Mano, and he's at FO_A Shots. Please keep your eyes out for the 2020 Football Rookie Handbook. It is out now. It's on bookshelves. You can find it at Barnes & Noble, at Amazon, or on actasports.com. We got free shipping, so please check it out. The best scouting reports heading into the draft. Some good reading for you as you are stuck in your house or apartment or wherever you are for the next couple of weeks.
So, it's the book I will be reading to prepare for the draft, so you should be reading it too.
Yeah, there's plenty in there for you. For my co-host, Aaron Schatz, and our producer, Justin Stein, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.